Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
You are tuned in to Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR CA. I'm your host, Issa Arian. We do this every Tuesday. We are broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh Nation's territories here, live from the most western part of the Lower Mainland. Here from UBC's campus, so CITR, listen, if you've never listened to Off the Beaten Path, you're in for a treat. Listen, you know, been gone for a minute, but I'm back with the jump off. So listen, I had to take a quick break. You know, just kind of let me update you what's going on in my life. Listen, you know, so life has been life. And I feel like if you haven't tuned into Off the Beaten Path in a while and this is your first time, or maybe you've been waiting for me to come back, or maybe you've just been here listening to older episodes, or maybe every Tuesday you listen to Crimes and Treasons and you're like, you know what? I'm going to stay for the next hour and you're just going to tune into Off the Beaten Path. Listen, I got a treat. So what we like to do here on this show is we talk about what's going on here in the Lower Mainland and what's going on here in Vancouver, specifically in BC, what's going on here in Canada, what's going on here in the world, what's going on here all over. And sometimes we talk about what's going on in outer space. Sometimes we even go intergalactic. You know, we do it all. You know, we talk about arts, culture, music, movies. Sometimes we have some really smart people on here occasionally. I'm fortunate that a lot of times those smart people are my friends. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're totally brand new. And it is a great opportunity to not only hear voices that you might not hear normally, but also everybody has something to say. Everybody's got something to share. And CITR is a great place for not only for me to share my thoughts, but also for people to come on here and share. So listen, we do this. You don't have to wait until the fund drive. You don't have to wait until the fund drive to give back to CITR to help continue and contribute to the amazing programming that CITR puts on here. Not only do we break new artists on here, we play new music, we share music that I listen. I know that you listen to Vancouver radio. You're tired of listening to the same shit over and over and over again. Listen, and that's not what you're going to get here. You're going to get new music. You're going to get interesting music. You're going to listen to new people. CITR is the best radio station in Vancouver. It's probably the best radio station in BC. Definitely the best radio station in Canada for sure. And so you get the opportunity to contribute. So go to CITR.ca. Listen, you can give money anytime. Just make sure that when you give money, you say, hey, you know what? It was ESA that really pushed me off the beaten path. Really pushed me. Really made me want to give back to my community. Also, if all you can give back, if you don't have money, all you can give back is your voice and your opinion, listen, you can call us 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. I'd love to hear your voice personally. So if you want to call in, you can definitely do that. Listen, Tuesday night, it's a great, great night of radio. From 8 to 10, we have Crimes and Treasons. 10 to 11, you got me with Off the Beaten Path. And then from 11 to 12, we have Bailey with Jazz Sound. So stay tuned for the entire night. Listen, I got some great music. I got some great jokes. We know that there's a lot going on in the world. And by a lot going on, it seems like, we'll talk about it a little bit when we come back from musical break. Because for me, there's a lot going on in my life. And also, sometimes I find that it's best to just shut the fuck up. And that is free. So remember, when you don't know something and you're not informed, or maybe you feel like you might be misinformed or ill-informed, remember, you can always shut up. That is a very valuable lesson that I learned at work, that I should have learned in school, but no matter where I learned it, I don't know if you know me. But if you know me in real life, you know that I never learned it. Or at least decided to not listen. Anyways, man, I've had an eventful few weeks. But the highlight is getting back out on the water. So if you know me, you know that I like sailing. This weather has been absolutely crazy. One of the best things about fall and the transition of the seasons is that the wind picks up as the pressure moves around. The Pacific Northwest moves around the Pacific and pushes different types of wind conditions within the Salish Sea. And so this past week, I went down to Washington to sail with some new people. So that was such a treat to be able to sail. I mean, I love the people who I sail with. Honestly, going to sail with new people in a new race on a new boat makes me remember just kind of one of the things I really love about sailing is the people who I do it with. So not that the people weren't I did it with weren't great, they're amazing as well, but there's something about years and years of kind of collective suffering that you kind of bond with people. And so if you've ever done anything that required years and years of suffering and you've done it with people, you understand. And that's something that sailing is about. So when sometimes when you're sitting on the rail by yourself or sitting on the rail with other people, you feel very lonely. But this weekend was great. I had a great weekend sailing. If you like inclement weather, there's really no other place to be than being outside. I think that there is something about experiencing the elements that I love about sailing. So being out in the wind, the water, being a little scared, being a little terrified. Because I think that personally, you got to do some scary shit from time to time. I might have talked about this on the radio before, but there is a futurist. Well, it was a futurist, and I think that it'd be worth going to look it up, but it's called The Slow Cancellation of the Future. And so it's a speech on YouTube and talking about how this idea that we are so obsessed with things never dying, things never transitioning, things not changing, which is, and then also having the ability now with technology to keep things the same and really push us into this kind of ever-present, unevolving, yet we feel like we're moving forward state that keeps us kind of in this loop. And so one of the things about that is that time exists because death and decay exists. And so, part of death and decay is about fear. And so you are not really moving. You're not really moving forward, and you're not really spending your life doing anything if you are not experiencing loss and you're not experiencing fear and you're not experiencing worry and anxiousness. Like, those are the parts of life that really push time and make you feel alive. This is a theory, because if everything is happy and nothing dies and everything is just growing and everything is just continuing to get bigger and better, you know, essentially that's what cancer is. And so you are not able to kind of experience what the future was going to look like. It's a future that doesn't include you, and you have to be okay with that if you want to be able to move forward and progress. And it's just a very interesting way to think about things. Anyways, I think that's how I think about sailing. I think about experiencing just the outside and being in those elements. It just makes it amazing. Anyways, when we get back, listen, I have some great music for you. I have a great playlist that was put together by a friend, and it's got some great French music, some great funk music on there. And I can't wait to share it with you. So stay tuned. Got some great music, got some funny stories, got some serious stuff to talk about. It's kind of some things that will make you think, and things that will make you go, hmm. So stay tuned. back with Off the Beam Path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. Listen, like I said, you can call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. So, like I said, there's so much stuff going on. So much stuff going on. And it's one of the reasons why I decided not to do radio for the past few weeks is just because I find it, I found it was pretty difficult to be on a radio, particularly talk about current events, talk about what's going on. Like me, I like to be informed and I like to make sure that I have an interesting or at least, you know, a knowledgeable or well-read perspective on kind of what the things that I like to talk about. And what I found is that, or kind of once I was doing some reflection, is that there is always a right answer, right? And there's always like a pressure to make sure. I mean, like I said, there's always a right answer. You can't see this air quotes. However, there's always a pressure to make sure that you are saying the right thing, that you are always on the right side. And when as of right now, like there is, there's quite a few conflicts going on in the world, but the one that is really center stage is, you know, Israel-Palestine. And so it's so interesting because growing up in an area that was like I didn't realize that there were people in the country, in the, you know, in the world, really, you know, in the country that didn't really know Jewish people, because where I grew up, there's so many Jewish people. Like, you know, like I suppose particularly I went to a school that was like predominantly Jewish. And so I like kind of grew up in a world where I didn't realize that that was a thing. And then so growing up in also, and then learning that, like, you know, when you hear about anti-Semitism, you hear like that as being something that I feel like in the area that I grew up in didn't really show his face, kind of like the same way that like I also grew up in a place that's so multicultural where we didn't really see overt racism. It just kind of didn't really, I'm not gonna say it didn't exist, because I mean there were definitely some covertness, but you didn't really see people, at least people knew how to kind of navigate that type of environment in a way that wasn't kind of overtly offensive, kind of where they just were not, you know, that wasn't part of what they were doing. And so they kind of, it wasn't a part of like the energy to just kind of be racist or be, you know, anti-Semitic. And so it wasn't until I was an adult, one, that I realized that people didn't know Jewish people, and also people that people were like had these open beliefs and just kind of like thought like that. And so as an adult, I had even gotten not hypersensitive, but like, you know, being able to listen and kind of hear this type of language. And as I got an adult, you know, just kind of understanding that, oh, the world is a little bit different than the bubble that I grew up in. And so, you know, you have to kind of be, you have to watch and you have to listen and you kind of have to be on guard for not just, you know, for people, you know, making aggressiveness against me, but also against other people. And so I think that, you know, as you get older, you kind of learn about these things and learn how you can, you know, help protect your friends, or you can, you know, you can kind of not just be a bystander. And I find that this has brought out some, like this most recent, and what you learn as a growing up in an area like that is you learn that there is a large, you know, that's like a conversation that happens within the community, you know, being pro-Israel or being, or understanding that there's issues that is caused by the state of Israel within Palestine. And so you hear, you understand, you know, growing up in the area, you understand that that is just not the the group in itself is just not, obviously not a monolith, and there's dissenting ideas within that group, just like there is in the United States, just like there is in all other different types of groups. And so it is very interesting, you know, now to watch, because I feel like for me, this is like the most, you know, even though I'm not on Instagram anymore, which I feel like has really helped to level my emotional reaction to kind of how I see things. You know, I feel like, you know, not saying that's even good or bad, but it's very, so much easier to ignore stuff when you don't have Instagram and you're not constantly scrolling and seeing what other people are writing, because some of the things that people, what you understand is that on the internet, people have to be hyperbolic to get their voice heard. Nobody is on the internet sharing lukewarm takes. It is only the most hyperbolic, and or you have to be either really well informed and be able to communicate that information in a precise way that also doesn't feel like propaganda, or you have to be hyperbolic, and that's the only way that your things get shared. And so what you see is that people are responding to this in the most hyperbolic way, which in this case, particularly from a lot of people who I'm familiar with and who I know and people who share their information with me, is they go too far. What we're witnessing is, you know, in the state, is that we have kind of gotten into a, like, our environment is, we are really comfortable watching people drop bombs on people, which is that, you know, I feel like since 2001, since the invasion of Iraq, we have just really gotten comfortable with the idea that people are dropping bombs on TV. The people dropping the bombs don't give a shit if you're watching them on TV or not. The people who are getting bombed are on TV, please, you know, begging and pleading to stop being bombed. Not in their native language, and yet we see protests try to get people to stop bombing. That doesn't do, you know, it feels like it doesn't do anything. It feels like it's happening, everything happening too slow. And you just feel a little bit helpless, like your voice doesn't matter. Like, and that's a really, honestly, that's how I've been feeling the past few weeks, which is that, one, I obviously didn't want to come on radio and say something stupid, but also the idea that, like, it feels as if we live in such a hyper-visible world where people can have their voices heard all times. People can share information, people can share videos, people can share whatever. You can contact your representatives as easy as possible, and yet nothing happens. Like, there's such little movement, it happens so slow, and our representatives are not representing. That is a problem, and it just feels like, you know, it just feels like it's all bad. And so there was a time where I felt like, you know, you are listening to people and you are trying to understand what is right and what is right and how do we stop it. But obviously the one thing that is wrong is that the Israeli military continues to drop bombs on civilians, and it feels like we're back in that Cat Williams skit where we're talking about insurgents, you know, but we haven't learned anything. Like, that's one thing that's really frustrating, I think, and what's really frustrating me and my friends is that, like, we talk about this all the time, but it just feels like we just continually are, as a collective, just not learning anything, and it doesn't feel like we're ever going to learn anything. So it is hard not to just withdraw. But that's also what kind of feels what it wants you to do. Yeah, so, I don't know. You know, it's, people say it's complicated, but it doesn't really feel that complicated. you know. It doesn't feel, it feels very similar to when the United States killed 1.6 million people in Iraq and Afghanistan over an 18-year period, and people say it's complicated. You're like, it's not that complicated. At least it doesn't feel that complicated to me. When we get back, I have something that is kind of wild. And it's also kind of wild that this is around the same years as the conflict started, but this has absolutely nothing to do with that. And it's much more fun to talk about. It's when a certain food dish was brought to Canada, and it might surprise you. So stay tuned. Thank you. Back at Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. I'm your host. So, in the 50s, it's interesting. A woman named Kathy Brady on the CBC was introducing a new and upcoming dish called the pizza pie. Now, like, imagine. It's kind of crazy to think that, like, pizza was, like, something that was new and upcoming. It's just kind of, like, one of those things that makes me struggle to even kind of wrap my head around the fact that there are so many foods that we eat, particularly eat in North America, that are foreign. I mean, when you think about I don't even know what Canada's national dish is, and I don't know what the United States national dish would be. It's like a steak? I don't know. But you think of, like, the food that we eat the most, you know, like spaghetti and pizza, and, you know, my family's, you know, we eat Caribbean food. And, like, there doesn't really feel like, I guess, like a hamburger would be like the most uniquely American dish, but... like, all the foods that we eat are so, you know, are technically foreign foods. And so it's interesting to know that, like, there was an origin of the pizza. I don't know. Something that's just fascinating to me. Like, I think of, and when I say an origin, like, there's a U.S. origin, you know, a Canadian origin. Like, it came here at one time and people had to learn about it. Like, imagine having to learn about the pizza. I guess there are people now that have learned about it. Like, I was watching the first game of Victor Wembanyama. He's a dynamic rookie from the San Antonio Spurs. And after his first big game, the NBA TV crew asked him, is he going to have some churros? And he's like, a churro? What's a churro? And I was like, damn, they don't have churros in France? It's an abomination. Like, I feel like churros are delicious, and I feel like churros would travel. Like, I feel pretty confident that there are Mexican people in France, and they would have brought the churro there by now. But I guess that would also, like, assume that there's French people in Mexico, and they brought the crepe there. And I don't know if the crepe is in Mexico. Like, I've never been to Mexico and seen crepe on the menu, so why would churros be on the menu in France? I guess you never really think about it, but for me, it's one of those things that makes me go, You know, just the idea that pizza was that once new. And I bet when pizza first came, they were giving Italians the blues. You know what I mean? Like that, like you eat that pizza shit, you know, until they folded one over and had it. I bet the pizza in 1950s was disgusting though. Like, I feel pretty confident to say, like, the pizza that they had back then was probably dookie, you know, like, just trash. Seems like in the 1950s, they might have put Jell-O on the pizza. Like, they put Jell-O on everything back then. And I'm happy that we're not eating 1950s pizza. I'm also happy that, like, you know, there's a lot of pizza toppings that have gone away. Like, who eats black olives on their pizza? Except for my mom. My mom is the only terrorist that eats black, only non-terrorist. My mom is not a terrorist, even though she used to terrorize me. But olives, anchovies, get that shit out of here. Chicken, get it out of here. Who's eating that stuff on pizza? I bet that's all they ate on pizzas back then in the 1950s. I don't need to watch that CBC segment because I don't want to be... I feel like if you're watching TVs from the 1950s, there's a good chance that they're going to say some racist shit, and then I'm just going to have to cancel pizza altogether. So I didn't want to do that. This next story is about somebody going above and beyond for his job, and that's just something that I can get behind. Like, I can get behind going above and beyond my job. Like, I find that for myself particularly, I'm in a dilemma where I at once you know, I am a anti-capitalist. I do not like capitalism. I feel like capitalism is keeping me broke. And not only is it keeping me broke, it's keeping me, all my friends, broke and competing. And where we, not on purpose, but we struggle to build community, particularly because we are just working, because we work so hard, work too hard. And, but at the same time, I also believe in hard work. Just the idea that you need to show up and work. You know what I mean? Like, you need to show up, you need to work. And if you're at work, you need to be working and not putting it off to other people. And so when I, so like at one point I'm like, yeah, you should work hard. And then other, on the other side, I'm like, fuck work. But for the most part, I have to go to work. So I have to be pro work, you know? Anyways, this border agency, the border agency says that employee exposed himself to hostile espionage by seeking out sex parlors. So the Canadian Border Service Agency employee opened himself up to threat of exploitation by hostile intelligence services after visiting massage parlors in China, Japan, and Canada. And this is just one of the cases of 500 that were found last year as a part of an information request. And so, according to the redacted file, the employee allegedly engaged in illegal activities by purchasing sexual favors in massage parlors in several countries. And so, they say that he's opening himself, because we know it's a dude. We know that he's opening himself up to potential hostile, you know, espionage shit. But I wonder if the Canadian Border Service Agency ever once considered that this man was actually in there doing spy work. Because, like, that's what I imagine. I imagine James Bond goes into massage parlors and he knows which massage parlors that the other spies go into and that the other world leaders go into. And, you know, the people, and that's how he gets his information. And so I don't like that, the way that the police officer is throwing this man under the bus by not hearing his side of the story. And since his name is redacted and he is, and this is still under investigation, the only way for this person to clear his name is to call 604-822-2487 at 604-UBC-CITR. Because we need to hear both sides of the story. Because, listen, if you're on the clock and you're going to massage parlors in China and Japan, I have to assume that you're out there working hard for the safety of your country. Like, I would much rather my Border Service Agency people be going to massage parlors than dropping bombs or holding up people at the border or rejecting visas. You know, do your job. Anyways, the Canadian Service Intelligence Agency warns of honey traps, which are, you know, like the people who would lure James Bond in and seduce him. But see, what they didn't understand is that these James Bond types have the upper hand, because they already know, they're thinking three steps ahead of the game. So I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt until we learn otherwise. How long before we have another pandemic, do you think that it could be before we have a response that is equal to the threat? You know, like, how bad would a pandemic have to be now for people to go back into lockdown for several months, take vaccines, and just submit to the types of control that had in 2020? Like, I feel like it would take 60 years at least. I feel like my generation is going to have to die before they do that again. And so, because I say that because, well, one, somebody in the University of Victoria has tuberculosis, which is wild. Like, I didn't know that TB was still in the streets. Like, I didn't know that that was still a thing. I thought, you know, when you get the TB test and they pump that little bubble in your arm, that it just goes away because, like, who the hell has TB? I'm like, why are y'all still testing for this? Who's got tuberculosis? Wrong. People got tuberculosis in Victoria. And there is a rare avian bird flu that Bonnie Henry warns, you know, can maybe spread to humans. And what you learn is that, what I deduce is that nobody's going back into a goddamn lockdown. That's just not happening. Like, I just can't imagine that they can lock down the country again and go back. Like, me personally, I'll be fine because, well, one, I had the benefit of being able to work from home, which kind of sucked because I was working. But also, you know, got a little bit of cash. And also, I like my house. And I liked my house then, and I like my house even more now. So this idea that I can be locked into my apartment and I have, like, a little bit better living situation than I did back then, considering I don't have a roommate, sounds rather nice. Because, as you know, if you listen to the show, you know that one thing I hate is that I hate people to experience just a little bit of joy in life. And so if we could take away all of the little joys and I could just exist in my own little bubble, that would be amazing. But I don't think that's ever going to happen again. So I'll just have to lock down myself. And before we jump into, like, the funny news, we got to talk about one serious thing, which is there's a sex offender on the loose named Randall Hopley. Randall Hopley, if you're listening to this show, I'm putting your picture up. I've never seen someone. Listen, you listen to the show. Randall Hopley escaped the halfway house, missed curfew on November 4th, and he's still at large today. Like, he's still at large. It's been nearly a week and a half. Now, if you see Randall Hopley, he was sentenced to 6 years in jail for abducting a 3-year-old in Southeast BC in 2011. And now there's a Canadian-wide warrant for him breaching his long-term supervision after removing his electric monitoring ankle bracelet. Now, if you look at this man, he looks like a fucking sex offender. Like, I don't know what a sex offender looks like, but it looks like Randall Hopley. And if you see him, call the police. I can't imagine he looks like what he did in his mugshot, because that's got to be the most terrible picture I've ever seen. But also, this might be one of the most terrible people that's walking the streets right now, so we need to make sure that we're keeping an eye out for Randall Hopley. So maybe if you're in the SkyTrain, just yell out Randall and see who looks. Randall is such a name. Like, I feel like names are some of the most powerful things. And if you have a name like Randall, you got to fight real hard to not be a creep and a snake. But when we get back, I have some funny. Oh my God. I have some great music for you, but I also have some funny stories and some things that just make you be like, what? I can't believe that. We'll be right back. record off the beam path here on 101.9 CITR, and that's OK Kaya with Mother Nature's Bitch. So, with only a few minutes left, listen, imagine if you got fired and still was owed $76 million from your job. Well, if you coach college football, that could be you, because that's Jimbo Fisher, the former head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies. He signed a 10-year, $94 million contract 4 years ago, and he was fired just this past Saturday after being owed $76 million because that $94 million was fully guaranteed. Just crazy on college football, kind of college football, and what are the numbers in that? Like $76 million. Like if my job fired me right now, they would owe me about 7 weeks of severance. But imagine if they even paid me $76 million. That's insane to coach college football. Like the money to coach college football makes me feel like it's crazy. There are like elementary school coaches making quite decent money playing coaching football. High school coaches don't make shit. College coaches make a ton of money just to coach football. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like when we talk about there's a recession, we talk about people are struggling, we talk about rents high. Like that's one thing we talk about in the show a lot. Yet there are people who can, there's people who are making $76 million to not work. It's crazy. You know, there is people spending $1,500 on Taylor Swift tickets. Insane. Yeah, most of the world is struggling. It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. One last story before we get out of here, which is Bobby, Guinness World Record holder for oldest dog ever, dies at 31 years old. Honestly, that's crazy. This dog also looks sick and sad. Now, listen, I understand loving your dog and keeping your dog alive, but at some point, the quality of life has to be an issue, right? It's like, I don't even know, it was 30 times. That dog is 210 human years old. Let that dog rest. Anyways, rest in peace, Bobby. Hope you had a great, great long life. And you know what they say, all dogs go to heaven. Listen, that's my show. I'm out. Stay tuned for Bailey next. And then stay tuned after that for some DJing. I'm out.
Schubert. So stay tuned.